This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
I'm Dave Detman, also known as Dr. Gadget. I've got a new podcast called The Big Idea. And every week, I talk to inventors and visionaries who made it big in their respective industries. We'll tackle weekly trending tech, provide inside tips for your success, and go deep dives on the latest and greatest innovations. And I know you're going to love this part. I'll also have plenty of free giveaways. Who doesn't love free stuff? So listen to and follow The Big Idea with me, Dr. Gadget, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast One, and wherever you get your podcasts.
JB Weld, today's podcast brought to you by JB Weld, world's strongest bond. The brand DIYers and pros have trusted for over 50 years. You got to keep it in your cupboard, your toolbox, your garage. Available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, wherever you find finer products. Proudly made in the U.S. of A. All right. We'll talk a lot about off-road racing in this show. Some tribute cars, the new Corvette. Matt has driven the new vet. He's got some thoughts on that. And Amy Lerner is joining us. She's made a fantastic doc called One More Win. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance, they are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. I chose to get on, man. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast, man. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there. How say you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. All right. What are we talking about today?
There's all kinds of stuff. We've got a guest today and some stuff happening in the car world. I've been driving a Corvette C8. Did you see it? It's bright orange.
Yeah. I just saw the hood.
Oh, yeah. The lot's full over there. There's a lot of stuff going on. I saw your guys running around.
So yeah.
I kind of hid it in between a bunch of SUVs.
I just saw the hood, and I thought it was a McLaren because it's orange.
I think that's kind of what they want. I mean, the C8, you've seen the new Corvettes now. I know there was one parked in front of your house for a while, and we talked about the red color, and, they're now mid-engine. And it's just, I was saying before, everything you've been hearing about the car, it's all on point. The car's good. It's just a good car, and it has more of that kind of supercar feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the Corvette purists were like, we missed the front engine. Mm-hmm. America's sports car is now really kind of America's hypercar, and we're just kind of scratching the surface on the C8 platform. Mm-hmm. Z06 coming out and hybrid version coming out and maybe some sort of supercharged or turbocharged ZR1 version. Mm-hmm. Coming out. It's just it's a great car now, but it's also a great jumping off point of where they can take this car.
Whenever they change the platform of the car, there's always an evolution. If the architecture of the car is the same, then there's a kind of a slow evolution of we'll get a little bit better this year than we were last year. But when you change the architecture of it, you move the engine, you change everything around on the car, then you're now almost back to zero, and then the evolution grows fast.
Yeah. It's when GM presented the car, we went to one of their big, the big unveiling here a couple of years ago in LA, and they asked, why go to mid-engine? They said, well, we kind of felt like we've pushed the limits of that current layout, that front engine design, even pushing that front engine back as much as possible. They're like, that's it. And where we want the car to go, sort of required a mid-engine platform. And now we know they're testing a hybrid version, which we understand could be kind of like the NSX. We have the gas engine in the back, a couple of electric motors powering the front, make it an all-wheel drive hybrid version, and then what does that do, you know, to the performance and the range and a number of other things? So it's an impressive piece, you know, and it's got the bits that you want, a front axle lift so you can go over the speed bumps and get into the garage. And
Photograph it that way.
When I pulled in, I lifted it to get up into there, and I was like, oh, you'll probably see the car when it comes in.
Lower it down.
Thing you're going to ask me is that nose up. So I put the nose back down so you could see it in the parking lot the way it's supposed to be.
That's the beauty of you, Matt, because you're going to get back in the car. You're going to drive another 7 feet. You're going to raise it back up again. And then you're going to leave and then lower it back down. But you left it down.
I wanted to park it down because everyone's going to be looking at it. You know, Sean will come out and look at it and see what the car is.
Right.
I was like, I don't want it to look like it's launching into space. You know? And they thought about some pretty good features. That front axle lift, whenever you hit the button, it asks you, do you want to remember? And so it uses GPS. So now when you pull in, you know, you pull into your driveway or whatever, as you're getting close, It'll say, you know, based on memory or whatever, based on location, it's putting it up. And then when you hit something like 20 miles an hour, it automatically goes down again.
Oh, it'll automatically go down. And what was it, about 3 inches worth of lift? I mean, I know you probably don't know.
Yeah,
but
that's a good question.
Me that like, 4 is a little too much.
I think 4 is too much. And
2's not enough.
It might be between 2 and 3. I'm sure Chris could probably find it, but I know they had all these specs when the car was released. I just didn't. I just been enjoying driving it. I haven't really printed out the whole sheet.
What's your base at? I mean, what's the price of your base?
So the one I'm driving has a few options on it, but $88,000 is what it is. So it, you know, when these first came out, they said they were going to be $60,000 for the absolutely base model, and nobody's really buying the $60,000 version. Mm-hmm. But this one is with the Z51 handling package and a few other options, nicely equipped, sport seats, it's $88,000. But the Z06 that's coming out, I think they're trying to make that thing base at just under 100. Maybe it's 98,000, 99,000. Mm-hmm. You could probably add $20,000 of options. But when I say that car is quick and performs, I don't mean like against base model McLaren. I mean against like 720 and 765 McLaren. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Z06 will do 0 to 60 in somewhere like 2.5 seconds.
Wow.
And it's just going to be an animal for $110,000-$120,000.
So when they go to the hybrid, will it be all-wheel drive? I mean, I don't know how they count that, because you got the rear engine, you got the rear-wheel drive, put the motors in the front, or is the motor spinning the prop shaft or the drive shaft?
Yeah, we don't have the full specs, but how I understand it, I believe it's going to be one or two motors in the front powering a front axle, probably two motors in the front. On the front wheels, and then the gas engine powers the rear wheels, and it's very similar to the NSX.
I was wrenching in the garage last night on Sonny's electric bike, which the back tire was just dust. I don't know how it got so worn down, but there was nothing. It just looked like a tennis shoe with no sole on it, you know. It was just there was no knobbies on it anymore. Everything, it was like down to the belts.
We're in a tire shortage. Can you get a new one?
The front tire was in decent shape, because I'm guessing with the electric bikes, the rear tire takes more of a beating than the front tire. And maybe it's that way with all bikes, but I didn't notice a serious disparity in wear between front and rear on just the pedal bikes, you know. But, yeah, I had them order a tire, order tubes, and I went down to the garage last night at like 9:30 at night and just did both tires. Pain in the goddamn ass,
I'm sure, getting the rear off. Like, front, you probably did first. You're like, oh, this is easy. And then you're like, well, now I can't quit because I've already done the front, and I got to finish the rear.
Yeah, the rear was a pain in the ass. It was a mess. He doesn't, you know, maintain it at all. It's a dusty, oily mess. And then it's also an electric bike, so there's shit plugged in and stuff going into the axle. And I was like, oh, yeah, what is all this? Plus, it's a 14-speed or whatever, so it's got the big sprocket cluster on the back.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, there's...
Did you remember which sprocket you took it off of before? Because then now you're in the wrong gear all the time when you're trying to switch gear.
I magically may have gotten it right, although I didn't... I should take a picture of everything.
That's it, just shoot a picture of it.
And then take the whole thing apart, but I never do that. I just take the whole thing apart. And so I took the whole thing apart and pulled the whole thing apart. And, you know, the axle has, you know, two flat spots in it, so you can't really turn it in the thing and blah, blah, blah. And it has these keepers that, like, hold it in place, and it's a big mess. Sonny just stood there, watched me.
I was going to ask, was he inside watching basketball or something?
No, the front tire, what'd I do? The front tire, I was able to leave the tire on the rim, but it's a big balloon tire.
Yeah.
And I'm not used to the balloon tire. They don't set or seat the way you're used to, but... Well, I was able to do both tubes and both tires in, like, I don't know, it's like an hour or something out in the garage. It sucked. And I didn't have any open-end wrenches, so I had to use a crescent wrench on everything.
On everything, yeah.
I mean, the front has a quick release, so that...
Yeah, that one'd be easier.
I was able to figure that one out. And the new bikes are disc brakes.
Yeah.
So back in the day... You couldn't inflate the tire and drop it back in because
that's right. Yeah,
because
the clamp. Little pads, the clamp.
Yeah, it wouldn't make it past the clamp brake, which seemed to work for 70 years before somebody went to the disc. But with the disc, you can fill it up fully and drop it in. The little pancake compressor back.
Yeah.
I was down there on my hands and knees, filling the thing up, trying to feel it. And the tire didn't seat right. Like, it kept popping and bulging, and I have to let the air out and hold it back down and fill it back up. It was a big, fat pain in the ass.
The tube might have been, like, a little twisted and then had to work its way.
It's something about the tire, these big 4-inch balloon tires that they don't just grab. Like we're used to with the old 10-speed tires or whatever, when you smack it on there.
Yeah.
Got the whole thing put back together. Told Sonny take it out for a test drive. Seemed to be good.
He didn't come back with a bloody nose. Dad, it didn't work.
No. But I paid my dues last night. I put the bike tires on. Yeah. It's a dirty mess.
Yeah.
I almost wore gloves.
And the whole thing just with the crescent wrench?
The whole thing was with a crescent wrench and a Phillips head screwdriver to get the weird keeper thing off that held the rear axle in place or from popping off. And then some weird chain guard, weird wire guard thing on the other side that I may have put on backwards. I don't know. When I was done, I pointed at it. I said, Sonny, does that look familiar? And he goes, I don't remember that.
Yeah, but so, that might be something he can just Google and find pictures of the bike online and zoom in. And
it'd be
And yeah, okay.
So keeping it real, Pops. And also, you kind of remember, it's a weird thing. I've changed so many bike tires as a kid that when I just started in on it, it was just like muscle memory. It was just like sliding the... I was using one of those paint can lid opener keys to pop the lid off the 1 gallon can.
Yeah.
I was using that as my breaker to get the tire pulled back on. But the tires didn't pinch that much. They were kind of loosely fit. But anyway, that's what I did last night.
All right.
And Sonny seemed to be fair to middling about it.
Were you, when you were done, were you kind of a, yes, it's good, I accomplished something, or you're like, I don't want to do this shit ever again?
I usually give Sonny the speech where I go, must be nice. Like living with a dude
who knows how to do shit.
Who knows how to do shit. Isn't that nice? Doesn't that seem like something? He's like, yeah. He doesn't care. But
he's like, someday I'll live with a dude who knows how to do shit.
That's right. My boyfriend will know how to do shit. Living with someone who knows how to do shit is no one cares. No one gives two fucking flying shits about it. But the reality is it's nice when you live with someone who knows how to do shit.
Yeah.
Fix stuff. Take care of stuff. Just this. Just doors. Mm-hmm. Doors alone. You live in a house, especially if it's a decent sized house, you got a lot of doors.
Yeah.
And they're always something. It's not catching, it's dragging, it's whittering. Just my expertise on doors alone.
Yeah.
That should be enough to get me a nice pot roast or something waiting for me.
Something.
Something. Nah. Right back to zero.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice getting in and doing stuff and getting back into that world. And my fingernails had so much grease under them that I actually had to, or dirt and grease, I had to actually clip them last night.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't know how to clean this stuff off.
You didn't just wear them as a badge of honor for a couple days?
No, bugs.
Just come in here to the studio and be like, see what's going on, everybody?
Bugs the crap out of me.
Yeah. I hit the brush. I get the little brush. And
I did it. I went, the only brush I could find was in the kitchen sink. Yeah. So I did it with that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say anything because people are going to use it now for other
stuff.
Yeah,
who cares? They should know.
All right. So we got Amy Lerner coming in. Tell us about Amy Lerner while I find my spot.
Yeah, here. Amy's got she's been on before. It's been a little while since she's been coming in. She's been a big racer and off-road and put together a documentary called One More Win about Rob Hall. So we're going to learn all about that doc, where we can see it and how she put it together and jumping into the entertainment industry.
She does the first female Dakar Challenge Safari Rally. I'm looking here, but it's Dakar to where? Dakar Challenge. What word is that? Australians in?
I think.
Is that a real word?
Yeah, I don't know what word that is. Could have been Australian.
Australasian.
Australasian. So Australasian is Asian and Australia?
I didn't know those connected.
Was a word either.
I didn't know those connected.
Australasia is a region which comprises Australia, New Zealand, and some neighboring islands.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So it used to be Paris to Dakar.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Then I heard there was some trouble and they couldn't go through that region of the world without some, you know, incidents with terrorists and things like that. So now maybe things have changed. Well, anyway, we'll talk to her about that. First,
bad
I'll tell you about
screwing up our racing.
First, I'll tell you, are you talking about Newsom? First, I'll tell you about Meguiar's car waxes have come a long way. Over the last few years, Meguiar's launched the next generation of protective products specifically geared toward DIYers. Oh, that's me. Hybrid ceramic spray wax, Meguiar's hybrid ceramic liquid wax, hybrid ceramic spray detailer, hybrid ceramic wash and wax, and hybrid wash, the wash mitt, too. You can get that. For 2022, Meguiar's has introduced hybrid ceramic pre-wax prep. Revive, paint easily, remove swirls and other minor defects. Hybrid ceramic trim. Restores the darkness and the shine to the exterior. So if you're driving a Chevy Avalanche, is that the one that's got all the junk on it?
It's like 40% plastic on the outside.
Yeah. Definitely want to get some Meguiar's. And now Meguiar's has hybrid ceramic solution for everyone. So you like your car and you work on your car like we do, you get Meguiar's over there. Good to see you, Amy.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see you guys.
Yeah. So let's talk about the doc, One More Win. What got you going down the road, pardon the pun, of making docs?
It actually was a story, and a friend of mine, a man named Rod Hall, who gave me my very first off-road driving lesson back in 2010, maybe it was, and I ran into him in 2015 at the Off-Road Motorsports Hall of Fame Award Dinner, shortly after I saw you guys and watched your Paul Newman documentary Winning, and Rod and I were just catching up about what he was up to and that in a couple of years he was going to be doing the 50th anniversary Baja 1000 race, and that he was the only person who had raced every single iteration of that race since the very first one in 1967.
Wow.
And just kind of, you know, rolled everything around in my head, called in the next day, and I said, hey, Rod, I've got this crazy idea. How about I make a documentary going through your history back to the early 60s in off-road racing, the racing that you're going to be doing leading up to this 50th race and your 50th race, you know, record-setting attempt. And he said, you know, Amy, people have come to me over the years. Can I write a book? Can I do a movie? And I've always said no, but because you're the one who asked me, I'm going to say yes.
What was he driving in the early days of the Baja 1000?
At the very first race, he drove in what he describes as a pink Jeep that he bought from a dealer somewhere in Southern California that supposedly was owned by an old lady who only drove it on Sundays. And his wife packed him up a cooler and took a couple of tools, and off they went down the peninsula. But later days, and the race in 1969 that he won overall was in a Ford Bronco. So he raced for Bronco a number of years in the early days.
Would have been the about the time or a little later than the famous Ole Bronco that sold at auction. I think sold for like $4 million or something. Remember
that?
Yeah, I
recall. It was a
couple of years ago. Oh, it's beautiful. I think there's a sweet spot in every car genre, race car genre. You know, it's like F1 cars now are technologically pretty cool, but when you look at them, they all just kind of look the same and they're not that sweet. And, you know, to me, it's like F1 has that kind of like 74 to 77, 73 to 77. It's like there's kind of a cool sweet spot, aesthetically at least, of the cars. And I feel that way with, you know, sports car racing and blah, blah, blah. Le Mans, you know, 70, 71, 72, you know, some of the offerings from Porsche and Ferrari and that kind of stuff. But that late 60s, mid-late 60s Bronco in the off-road trim, that just says to me off-road. Like if I was writing, put a picture of an off-road vehicle in the dictionary, that's the one I would put.
Yeah, it's absolutely an iconic era in off-road racing, those Broncos. And I had a chance to race that Bronco myself at the Mint 400 with Rod's granddaughter, Shelby.
Oh, really?
She and I each took half the race driving, and it was amazing and terrifying because I was driving in this automotive history.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about
it. I want to wreck it.
As iconic as it is as an off-road racer, it also feels like it would be brutal.
It was. I mean, the fun part of it was that a couple years back when Rod and Shelby decided to restore the Bronco and race it again, Ford gave them a crate engine that they dropped in. So it had a bunch of zip, but, you know, it's the suspension of a tractor. So
you're
just banging around out
there. I should correct myself. Big Ole sold at Mecum at Indy for $1.9187 or something. So
yes,
I said,
and Big Ole is actually going to be raced in the Nora Mexican 1000 in the beginning of May.
Really?
Yes.
Who is that human? I like people that do that.
Yeah. Who pays $2 million and then races it?
You know, that's something I should know, and I apologize. The name is not coming to me right
now.
Right. But yeah, that's
we'll
pretty
find
awesome.
Out at some
pretty
point.
Amazing.
Well, I think now it's part of the history of the car, the modern history. You know, I see it all the time where people go raced at the Petit Le Mans, blah, 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 you know, recently.
And it arguably adds value to the car. We've had this conversation about, you know, of course, the street cars, like, you know, taking the 935 and doing the Rolex Historics or, you know, Goodwood or something. And then now we're starting to see that in the auction listings of cars going, hey, participated, you know, 3 years in a row in Rolex Historics or Goodwood or Classic Le Mans or something. And
well,
it adds a little panache to the car.
Yeah, when they throw it, I mean, it's just more history. It's recent history. But, you know, when they put it up on Bring a Trailer, they'll throw a little video of it racing at the MIDI.
Yeah,
you know?
They don't talk about like the old fat doctor who's driving it at the time. They're like, no, the car did really well there, though.
So So it's 50 years of Baja. Is that where we're at now?
Yeah, so the 50th race was in 2017,
mm-hmm.
and the first one was in 1967. They skipped a year in the 70s because of the gas crisis, and the only person who raced every single one of them was, in fact, Rod Hall.
How old was he? When did he start and then stop?
So he turned 80 3 days after that 50th race.
Mm-hmm. So he was almost 30 when he started. And has the Baja 1000, has the course changed much over the years?
The course actually is different every race. They tend to nowadays alternate a run from Ensenada all the way down the peninsula to La Paz with a loop in and out of Ensenada. And mm-hmm. it's anywhere from 800 to 1,000 miles, and the course is always different.
Hmm. And are they still doing the Pan Americana or whatever it is over there in Mexico? I think they're doing that one too, right? Where that's the street version of it, which is equally crazy. But you see a lot of those cars on there, and it's a weird, has like weird classes, like the Hudson Hornet, you know, it's hauling down the paved, the blacktop there. And everyone's done it over the years mm-hmm. too. We're talking when we did the Shelby Dock, he crashed there and was driving. God, what do you think he's driving?
Yeah. Did Brock do it?
I'm sure Brock did it. He was.
Done it.
I think Shelby was driving a Austin Healey or an MG or some weird some weird car like that. Big Ole is going to participate in the Slow Baja Safari. I don't know. Chris is just writing that.
Yeah,
on
so
my
rather
screen.
Than risk it in the big race, it's going to participate in the Slow Baja Safari that coincides with a competitive event schedule. And it's being arranged on behalf of the vehicle's owners by Myers Manx LLC. That's Bruce Myers. Not the one we know, but a different one.
Yeah.
No, I think – isn't Bruce Myers the Myers Manx?
No.
No, this is different the guy who Myers. Created different the dune buggy.
Yeah.
No, I know that's the Myers Manx guy. I thought somehow Bruce had some association with that, but I guess he doesn't.
He might. Well, because it's – Bruce Meyer and then Myers, I think, with an S.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. So, one of them should change their name.
So Big Ole. Well, I love the livery on Big Ole.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's something about the gold and the white. And that was a Parnelli Jones car, right?
Yeah. We talked to them about that, right? We talked to Parnelli about it as well at one point. I wanted to ask you mentioned driving in. And Rod Hall's Bronco, but what is it that you normally race during the events that you did? What did you drive?
I've actually raced in a bunch of different things. Most recently, I competed at the Dakar Classic twice in a 1982 and 911, which was modified for the event and built as a tribute to that great epic era of the Porsche factory team at Dakar in the mid-80s. Jackie Eakes, Rene Match, when they won overall.
Is that the Rothmans car?
The Rothmans livery, yep.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a renaissance for those cars. People are doing a lot of tribute cars to those, and it's a we talked about it. I mean, the original stuff. I think they did a 959 probably as well. A 959 Rothmans, you know, era Paris to Dakar. Those things are millions and millions of dollars now,
I think the last one was traded at $5 million. The last one that came to auction. Yep.
Yeah, we've been talking about on the show periodically about how the whole rally sort of off-road rally. I mean, not the off-road trucks, but the sort of rally off-road cars, Lancias and Porsches
Audis
and things like that have just been getting all the money in the world.
Just been taken off in the past handful of years in the auction world, just became super collectible. And then, I don't know, maybe it was just sort of an untapped market that seemed really cool at the time. And I don't know which one sort of sparked that movement or, you know, which two or three sparked that movement, but they really started to go up in value. And I would imagine, you know, a handful of those cars were sitting around sort of unrestored. Like when you started getting into the, you know, the Newman cars and even sort of that era of racing, there was a bunch of cars that were just unrestored and at shops, and now everyone's seeing the value going, oh, we should restore this car and clean this car up and detail it and do the history and bring it to auction. And I feel like the rally cars have now done that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really starting to, you know, they're doing well. And like John Campion's collection of the Lancias and...
Yeah. Yeah, there's a Lancia that was on Bring a Trailer, probably just sold maybe hours ago of that. We were talking about before, it was like a 92.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the Martini? Oh, I'm trying to think of the liver. It was like a tribute edition or whatever. It's like a kind of a pop gun kind of car, you know. It wasn't much to it. It was like $250,000 last time I looked at it.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy what those cars are doing.
That's when you look at it, you're like, is that the Volkswagen?
Yeah.
The little Volkswagen. It has like the Martini stripe, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, not, you know, a street car. This one's just kind of a.
Yeah. Very low mileage. But it's a Martini 5 Evolution. But what did it sell for?
$255,000. Yeah. All right.
I mean, it's a VW GTI. Like it's
what it looks like.
It just looks like a Golf, you know, VW. It's $250,000 now.
It's the stripes.
It's the stripes.
Yeah.
It's the Martini.
I mean, you pay a lot for those stripes.
And I think that. That 959 Rothman, I think that thing sold a few years back, maybe for like $5 million. It's crazy. And I think people used to think of those cars sort of like they thought of the street cars. Like, well, what are you going to do with it? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I mean, I would argue the road racing cars. The road racing cars.
Yeah, look at that. Six million bucks.
When did that sell?
2018.
I would say, in a way, you're better off getting this car than you are getting some, you know, vintage F1 car or vintage Le Mans car, because the whole thing about the old vintage race cars is there's no ground clearance. You can't get them out of the driveway.
You can't
drive them. Like, they're literally, even if they had lights and turn signals, it's just they're so low to the ground, you just can't physically drive them. But this thing's raised, and, you know, it's got working headlights and brake lights, mm-hmm. and maybe, I don't know what the rules were, but it probably needed to have, like, a turn indicator or something on it. Like, there's probably some rules, and you could buy that car. It's going to be a little loud, but you could probably take that thing up and down the street.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Do you have any cars that you collect? Do you have anything in a collection at all?
Well, the Porsche is mine.
Okay.
But I'm happy to hear what you're saying because it's going to auction in May.
the tribute.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The tribute car?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a 911. Doesn't really matter what year because they're all sort of the same shell, right?
Yeah.
And then the motor in it is what?
It's got the stock 3.0 liter engine. It's been race tuned, so it's a little faster, but it's got, you know, the suspension is different to lift it up a bit more, give it a little more durability on the road. It's got all the FIA required safety stuff, the safety cage, race seats, race harnesses, extended fuel tank, and everything you'd need to fit the requirements to rally it. And I think that's a reason why some of the prices have been going up, because there's actually more and more events where you can actually use and race these classic
vehicles. They're getting into the vintage world.
The vintage racing
just
is
like the road racing stuff has gotten into the vintage world
for
some time. So they're just a little behind, but they've got their cues. They're like, oh, see what they're doing, we should do that too. Is it fuel injected or carbureted? Okay.
And what auction are you taking it to, or where are you selling?
It's gonna be with Bonhams and their Monaco auction May 15th, I think it is.
Oh, Bonhams in Monaco.
Yeah,
la-di-da.
Yeah.
Oh, fancy. I know.
What is
I hope you're gonna go there to watch it.
Maybe.
What do you think?
Because it'd be worth the trip.
Might be too nervous. But
what's the expectation? What are they thinking about reserve wise or estimate wise?
They're thinking like 180 to 220 euros in euros, so probably 200, 250.
Yeah, I think maybe more. I don't know what the euro breakdown is, but I think
it's $1.10 right now.
Oh, is it? That's what it's at? I thought it was even more. There's good precedent for it because Porsche. Well, first off, just modified cars we talk about all the time. Could be a split window Corvette. Getting all the money in the world. They used to not. Now it was like, hey, you shouldn't have, you had a split window Corvette. You shouldn't have fucked with it. Now it's not worth anything. But it is now. The aforementioned Broncos, you know, we put the Coyote engine in it and blah, blah, blah. Now those are 250 grand.
Yeah, right.
And, but the 911s, I mean, thanks to probably Singer and others, people get those cars, they breathe on them a little bit, and they go out and fetch some big bucks.
Even the tribute stuff, like you and I were talking about the bus on Bring a Trailer the other day, which was just a clone of the bus. But yours, what did that thing
sell? Well, the bus is a hauler.
Yeah, what was that thing? What did that sell for?
$340.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just somebody took a bus, made a replica Porsche race car hauler out of it, and sold it for $340,000.
Wow. Just as a cool piece that somebody made, right, with no real history to it. So I think your car will do well because it has modern-day race history, but also a tribute livery for what you did. Right. So it's kind of the niche that you want. Like, you want, you know, if you can't afford the real car, then you want something that is a real car, but sort of the modern interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense when the real car gets so far out of reach that normal people can't even think about it.
We talk about like four GTs. The four GTs are doing well, but look at the heritage painted one, you know, of, you know, the Le Mans 4 GT car, you know, the street car, but just doing it, ordering whatever. They make 50 heritage ones each year, and they're pulling so much more money than even, you know, their sister cars that aren't the heritage version, just being a little bit more limited production and that throwback to history.
And to put a finer point on it, the four GTs, you know, the actual four GTs of your, you know, 60s ones are, you know, completely out of reach financially. But you'll see some of those tribute cars, whatever cars. Those used to be like, well, that's a fake four GT, so it's not worth anything.
Yeah.
Those things are 200 grand now. Like, if you did one and you did it well, it's the same thing. It's gone up because the real McCoy is into the multi-millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And those things, and I, you know, the Cobra kits, not quite there yet. Maybe there's too many of them out there, but they're inching up too.
They are inching up, actually. If you think about, you know, 25 years ago, you're like, oh, these cars aren't worth anything, but they're worth 10% of the value of the real car. Well, the real car has gone up so much. Maybe these are still worth 10% the value, but now 10% is $250,000 or something.
Yeah, Chris, what is a 4 GT kit car? Who makes those things?
Superformance has...
Superformance, I think.
They have the Cobra and the Daytona. I don't know if they make the GT40.
It's a good question.
If they make the GT40 replica.
But everything is being dragged up by the price of the actual car. What are we looking at here?
Yeah. What company is this?
Who makes those things?
Oh, Superformance. So he does have them. Yeah, he does have them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to argue with the look of those, especially in that Gulf livery.
Yeah, so what would a Superformance GT40 go for?
It's kind of a Bring a Trailer thing. It's not really
put it in Bring a Trailer Superformance GT40 and see if a Mark 1 or Mark 2 comes up.
By the way, this film, One More Win, is available. The website, onemorewinfilm.com. I should, for all the guys who and gals who listen to this show and like to watch all the racing docs, I can't get enough of racing docs myself. You're going to enjoy this one. What's the next? Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Just real quick. They go for about 200.
Really?
Yeah. Bring a trailer.
That's up 100 grand, maybe 120 grand.
I don't know what they cost to make or anything like that.
Well, the conceit was with the kit car is you buy it, you sink 100, 125 grand into it, and you get divorced, and it's worth 40. That was basically what it was, you know? And it was the same with, you take, you know, you go to Chip Foose or the Ring Brothers and you drop off 350 grand to them and it's worth $125 or right. something like that. That was the old model. And it was just like, well, you got to eat it. You got money. That's a car you want. So be it. Now it's paradigm has shifted. And now you can say, I want to get one of these cars. I want to do it right. I want to put $125, $150 into it. Mm-hmm. And if I do it right, it's $200.
The Bronco is a great example of that. So many people are making, you know, shops are making Broncos specifically to take to like a Barry Jackson or something. And they're like, hey, you know, I got 100,000 into this thing and they're pulling 140 for something pretty decent. And more than that, as you mentioned, for really, really clean ones. I'm like, well, there's a little payday. Yeah.
What's your next event, Amy?
I think I'm going to compete at the Andalusia Rally, which is 5 days of racing in Spain.
Wow.
Yep.
What a life you have.
It's hard.
That's good. I mean, the rally life is great because it's all about going to great locales all over the world.
Yep.
Not really the Mint 400, but most of the other ones.
One day in Vegas is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But other than the Mint, you know, you're going all over the place in those cars. Seems like the new rally cars, too, they've worked out the filtration. Mm-hmm. I'm not a dust guy. I hate dust. And it would drive me insane just to eat dust because I definitely wouldn't be in the lead. I'd be eating dust the entire race.
Well, driving the Bronco that you pointed out with basically no front windshield, but then driving the 911... Right.
Actually, there was more dust in the 911 because in the Bronco, I had a full face helmet with this thing. It's called a Parker pumper, which basically you stick a hose on and you've got this thing in the back that filters the air and pumps it into your helmet. Mm. So you're breathing clean air. And we had an open face rally helmet in the Porsche. So,
I see.
No air conditioning, the floorboard, everything stripped down to reduce the weight. So there's lots of gaps in the floor. So you go through a sandy bit and it's like whoosh. Shower in the car of sand.
Not just like a scarf and goggles, like Mad Max style, sort of road warrior style.
Why not use the pumper on the
Porsche?
It's
a 911, yeah.
There's no room. You've got to carry two tires and a 120-liter fuel tank.
Oh, so the pumper is sort of like...
It's a machine.
Yeah, you know, it's like a cool suit thing.
Just drag it behind you.
Yeah.
Just a fifth wheel.
Yeah.
Just have it flop around. Can you tell us just a little bit more about, before we wrap up, about the film, what we can expect to see in the film, so when people want to go out and catch it?
Yep, great. As I mentioned, it is about Rod Hall, who is a legendary figure known around the world in off-road racing. He not only had been around for 50 years, but he has won probably over 200 races in his career. In the 80s, while he was racing for Dodge, he had a 36-race win streak back-to-back. People know him. People love him. And I had originally planned on, as I mentioned, doing a bit of a biography sort of wrapped into this racing that was – he was going to be doing leading up to the 50th Baja 1000. And shortly after we were filming, Rod got some health news that really changed those plans. And it turned into a very different story at the end of the race. It was a man struggling to achieve one last thing, racing against the course and the progression of a disease. And, you know, just getting him to Baja for the start line of that last race became probably the biggest challenge he'd ever faced.
Well, it's compelling stuff. And again, the website, onemorewinfilm.com, is where you go. Let me take care of my last.
Or Amazon or iTunes.
Or Amazon or iTunes. Sorry.
Yep. No, it's okay. It's all good.
It's on my list. I should have said that. JB Weld, World's Strongest Bond, the brand DIYers and pros have trusted for over 50 years, use their epoxies, super glues, putty sticks on projects big and small. Practically any surface, metal, wood, plastics, glass, ceramics, and keep it in your kitchen drawer, out in the toolbox, or down in the garage. I have them everywhere. Also, they're the proud owner of Herculiner, the original DIY truck bed liner. If you're looking for the world's strongest truck bed liner, Herculiner has you covered. And you can get JB Weld just about, well, I'll say everywhere. You can get it at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Amazon, Michaels, and more. And it's proudly made in the U.S. of A. We all use it here. You should use it there where you are. It's JB Weld. All right. Let's see. Indianapolis Helium Comedy Club. That'll be me May 6th and 7th doing 4 shows there. Do some live pods and some stand-up. Also, Sea Legs. We're doing a live pod out there. That's out in Huntington Beach. It's a fun venue. It's a big outdoor venue, but it's nice. I've played it before. You go to amcroll.com for all the live shows. And one more win available. iTunes, Amazon, everywhere you get your... you get your entertainment. Amy Lerner, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Nice to chat. Good to see you guys.
So, until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Amy Lerner and Matt the Motorator DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare, the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at GEICO.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
This February on Pluto TV, we're putting the spotlight on iconic black talent. Watch your favorite movies like Top 5, 48 Hours, and More Than a Game. And drop in to binge black TV classics like The Bernie Mac Show and Moesha. Pluto TV has hundreds of channels and thousands more movies and TV shows all for free. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.